You're very welcome to Saturday with Brian Dowling, and you can send in your views on any of the topics we cover. Here's how you can get in touch. You can text us at 51551. Our email address is saturday@rte.ie, and our Twitter address is at SaturdayRTE. Joining us now, SIPTU President Jack O'Connor, Peter Brown, Managing Director of the Irish Institute of Financial Trading, Mary Lou MacDonald, the Sinn Féin Deputy Leader, and Éan O'Riordan, the Labour Party TD for Dublin North Central. Jack O'Connor, you've been a long-time critic of the EU-IMF bailout process. Do you expect that conditions in terms of pay and everything else for your members will start to improve once the bailout is over?
Well, I'm not so much, Brian, a critic of the bailout process. I'm a critic of the one-sided austerity strategy, which is reflected in it and which has driven the European economy to the brink of collapse. As far as what I would envisage as we emerge from the bailout is concerned, I don't think that it's the end of our difficulties by any means. But I do think that it offers some space. I wouldn't overstate the extent of the space, because we're still subject to all sorts of other strictures, from the fiscal treaty to the two-pack and the six-pack and the markets themselves. But I would say that it offers some limited scope to begin to apply ourselves to the task of growing the domestic economy, of generating jobs and trying to find a way to emerge from the mess that we've been in over the last 5 years. Because the fact of the matter is that we haven't really had any real growth in our GDP since the end of the first half of 2011. And that's because the domestic economy is tanking.
If regaining economic sovereignty is to mean anything for, say, the likes of yourself and your members, surely it must mean that you must be looking towards a point in the not too distant future where you'd be seeking to improve their pay and conditions.
Yeah, but not only is it a desirable thing from the point of view of our members and workers generally that pay would be increased, it's actually key to growing the domestic economy, because 50% of our GDP is accounted for by consumption. And if you could find a way of increasing people's capacity to spend, and the best way of doing that is by increasing their wages, then we could begin to grow the economy again.
And last month, I think you were speaking at a SIPTU conference, and you said that in anticipation of the budget, that if the government went beyond the 5.1% deficit target, SIPTU and you would be encouraging ICTU to start beginning pay claims in the private sector. The government went slightly below that 4.8%. Do you still think now, is that on the agenda? Is there a case for that?
Yeah, I think I was actually surprised at the fact that the government came in at just slightly less than 2.5% of than 2.5 billion. I envisaged, given all the commentary, that it would be higher, but nonetheless, it's still lower than the 5.1%. And I will be raising at the General Purposes Committee of Congress the possibility of driving a pay agenda in the private sector, because, as I say, that's the key way to increase domestic demand and begin to grow the economy again.
You spoke then about a radical agenda for pay increases to try to generate domestic activity.
That's right. I mean, there are basically about there are two things that we can do at home domestically to improve things. One is that we can increase pay and consequently increase the purchasing power of union members and workers generally. We've had something like a 6% fall in after-tax pay in the private sector since 2008. And, of course, that's taken a great deal of spending power out of the economy. The other thing that we can do, parallel with that, is use the €6.4 billion that has been transferred from the National Pension Fund Reserve into the Strategic Investment Fund to begin investing in the economy. But that requires finding money in the private sector for every euro you spend out of the public.
Peter Brown, do you expect that economically and financially life is going to be tougher after we leave the bailout, because we're dealing with the international money markets? And do you see any scope at all for pay increases perhaps in sectors across the public sector?
Well, the first thing about leaving the bailout, I mean, leaving the bailout is really a political issue in terms of sovereignty. The reality on the ground is going to be the same, if not harsher, because all we're doing is changing from being monitored by the Troika to changing to being monitored by the bond market. And the bond market is much more stringent in terms of what they will want than the Troika are. The Troika have some skin in the game. Bond traders don't. Bond traders will buy your bonds if they think they're going to make a profit, and they will sell them if they're not. And they will want, right, the fiscal compact targets and the austerity and all of the issues that make them a profit, right, they will want them adhered to. So it's a much more stringent process. It mightn't be Michael Noonan sitting in front of the Troika. It's probably John Carrigan from the National Treasury Management Agency sitting in front of major bond players. But we are exiting the bailout and going into the bond market at an extremely dangerous time, right? The market is not in a good place. Now, to offset that, the National Treasury Management have gone in and pre-funded our requirement. And that
I think we have something like $25
billion. Yeah, and the problem with that is that you pre-fund that at about 4 or 5% and you put it back on deposit with the ECB at zero. So that's costing roughly 700 to a billion a year to have that backstop in place. And people don't appreciate that. It's very expensive. Pre-funding is the right thing to do, but when we had a lower debt of 30 or 40 billion, pre-funding was only 3 or 4 billion. It wasn't that significant. We're carrying forward 205 billion, like a ball and chain around our ankle, for the next decade.
Do you think we should have tried to negotiate an extended programme and get cheaper money?
I think it would have been safer within the Troika than out in the bond market. At this point, maybe for another 2 years. It's just too tricky. There's too many things going on in the international markets. Just to finish off just on Jack's point in terms, inflation is falling in Europe, right? We're you know, Mario Draghi didn't cut interest rates because Europe's fantastic. He cut interest rates because he's worried about deflation, he's worried about falling. That is not a time that you increase labour costs.
Eoin O'Riordan, the government, of course, is making a big issue of the fact, and understandably so, that we will exit the bailout. Mm. But what are your expectations of when we exit the bailout? Because a lot of people will say, what's the point in exiting this process if we can't look forward to better conditions, better pay, yeah, and a better standard of living?
Well, I think what we have, a lot of the narrative has been a little bit sort of cold for people when we talk about, you know, re-entering the bond markets as being our ambition. A lot of people don't really feel that that's going to improve their lives substantially. I think that the last 3 years have been difficult. I met the Troika myself 2 weeks ago. I found, to be honest, the whole experience pretty humiliating, the fact that we had to lay bare what we're doing and to effectively outsiders. But we've come to a process now after 3 years where, you know, we are exiting a situation that many people didn't think we would, and we have stabilised the patient. Now, I don't think anybody should suggest that we are now in, you know, that we have completely recovered. Yes, the last 3 years and actually the last 5 years have been particularly painful. There's a huge amount of things that have happened. But you can see any external analysis of where Ireland is now versus where Ireland was 3 years ago.
Politically though, where would it leave the government, the Labour Party, if in the next year or so the bond markets proved to be as rootless as Peter is saying?
Well, politically, you know, before Labour were in government with Fine Gael, the consensus across, you know, the Conservative parties was the way that you recast your economy is to drive down wages, you cut the minimum wage, you cut public sector wages, you cut social welfare and all the rest of it. And I'm interested listening to Jack that some of the successes we have had is that we actually put a halt to that. So when there was an agenda to drive down wages across the economy, it was halted and the minimum wage was increased and the joint labour employment agreements were reinstated. And also, you know, things like social welfare rates and basic rates of pay in the public service below 65,000. Some people say, well, that doesn't affect me, but actually it does. It puts a threshold decency under the economy. And then there's other things such as, you know, the four-year plan, which had 1.7 billion more worth of social welfare costs, which actually didn't happen because we're in government. So we've managed to maintain a certain threshold of decency under the economy, which I believe now is a springboard for a slightly better future. We have certainly, as I say, you know, stabilised the patient over the last 3 years, and now
I want to bring in Mary Lou McDonald.
The patient is beginning to walk, but I don't think we should, you know, overemphasise the fact that we still have a long way to go.
Mary Lou McDonald, critics of Sinn Féin might make the point that Sinn Féin obviously is opposed to the terms that we endured during the course of the bailout and the Troika and the difficulties that posed. But equally, leaving the bailout and going into the bond market, it's not going to be that much easier.
No, it's not. And the government still has an option of getting an extended line of credit from the Troika. They don't seem to be minded to do that.
Presumably because the terms and conditions would be particularly harsh would expose them to even more political criticism.
So we may speculate on that. We've never been told what those terms and conditions might be if that were to occur. I think where we are now, and I don't think there's anybody listening to this programme who is under any illusions, but that the last number of years have been very difficult and that we're facing into further difficulties. And let me just give you a concrete example of this, Brian. I mean, at the time that we're talking about exiting the bailout, we're also talking about cutting again about $1 billion from the health budget. Nobody seems to be clear as to exactly where this billion is going to be found. But I can tell you that lots of people who rely on those services, cancer patients, sick children,
but I want to
are
stick
all
primarily
extremely
to what happens when we leave the bailout and what the prospects are.
The reason I'm raising that example is because in real terms for people, the exit of the bailout has to represent a step change in terms of how we manage the economy and manage our services.
Let me say,
in my view, in the absence of a significant investment of scale in the domestic economy, in the absence of initiatives that get people back to work, in the absence of initiatives that put spending power back in the pockets of low and middle income families, we are going to be in a difficult, difficult place for a very, very long time. So
what do you say to people who might argue that if the government had followed Sinn Féin's advice, we'd be in an even more difficult position because we wouldn't find anybody to lend us money?
Brian, you could argue that from here to kingdom come. We're at where we're at now. The government hasn't historically listened to any advice that Sinn Féin has given to it. They chose not to listen. They didn't listen. They're in charge. They're in government. And we're here. And I think that's a kind of easy and a lazy argument from government sources.
But people will pick up on the previous positions of political parties. Sinn Féin
does. Of course
it.
They will. And the consistent position of Sinn Féin has been against austerity, against flattening time and again the domestic economy, against bailing out bondholders, against sinking billions and billions into toxic banks, and for a system that actually stimulates some level of growth. I mean, I agree with Jack. The issue now is growth. The issue now is jobs. The issue is about the domestic economy.
Jack, Dr. Tom Healy of the Nevin Institute, which is linked to the trade union movement, made a point after the budget and looking to the exit from the bailout. And he said the much proclaimed exit from the bailout on December 15 and the careful international choreography of brave little Ireland's success and our example to the rest of Europe represents no let up in the pressure on jobs, pay, living standards and services. Isn't that the reality that other trade unions face into?
That's quite entirely correct. That's the reality of it. And
how could you have expectations of pay increases?
I have to say that I was somewhat taken aback by what Peter said there in relation to my suggestion about growing the domestic side of the economy. I mean, the fact of the matter is this, is that three quarters of our economy, three quarters of our GDP is accounted for by domestic demand. Half of our GDP is accounted for by consumption. And what we have put forward in the trade union movement is the proposition that if we are to grow our economy, when you strip out inflation, by the way, hasn't grown at all since the first half of 2011, you cannot grow it as long as you are depressing three quarters of it. And you have to find ways of growing that three quarters of it. And then you have to employ the tools that are available to you. And really, given the fact that we don't have control over our exchange rates or anything else, there are really only two. There is the amount of money that people have in their pocket or in their purse to go out and spend. And if you increase that, you can increase the 50% of GDP, the bit that is 50% of GDP. And the only way we can do that now, post-budget, is by increasing pay. And there is a certain... No, allow me, there's a certain amount of nonsense about this. You see, the fact of the matter is...
I want to let Peter Brown respond to a second
of, yeah, but just allow me to make the point first and then he can respond to it completely. The fact of the matter is that after tax, private sector pay has fallen by about 6% since the collapse of 2008. That if you include the taxation component of it, it has been more or less stagnant. Now, the key point to make here is that if you compare the pay cost component of products and commodities and goods and services in Ireland vis-a-vis our main trading partners, now as against 2008, it's fallen by 17%. And they're not my figures, they're the central bank's figures.
Okay, the issue is, I'm totally in agreement with stimulating the economy, right? Everyone knows the only way out for Ireland is growth. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows that, right? Mm-hmm. Right across the Eurozone, everyone knows growth
and
is,
everything
is
in
the
this
key.
Budget is hinging on
and
2%
everything
growth
in
next
this
year.
Budget is hinging on growth. Now, the way to achieve growth is through stimulus, right? And stimulus is through investment and creating jobs. The characteristics of a recession which we're in and the characteristics of a depression is that people save money. They repay debt. If you increase people's salaries, they pay off debt. They don't go out and spend it, they pay off debt. The whole reason Mario Draghi is cutting interest rates is to try and get people to take money out of their bank accounts and spend it. There's 80 billion worth of cash in Irish banks. The reason interest rates are down below so that you won't even achieve the rate of inflation, the reason that dirt tax is up to 41% is to try and get those people to take that money out and spend it to stimulate some growth. But the difficulty, and Japan found this and they stayed in depression for 20 years, the difficulty is if people don't have confidence in the economy, all they do when they get more money is they repay debt.
They didn't increase wages in Japan.
I might just refer very quickly. We just two texts coming in. Actually, one supporting Jack's position, one supporting Peter's. Is Jack referring to the one-sided austerity that protects the top salaries, basically free pensions and lump sums, some in the public sector at the expense of some private sector wealth creators? And another text in, typical of trade union freakonomics, consumers are not spending because they're paying down money previously borrowed. Raising wages without a similar increase in productivity would only make Ireland less competitive. Just to go to Éireann Ó Ríodhán for a second. Éireann, one point that Jack made, and it's a rather colourful phrase, he described the Labour Party's role in government as being akin to battling at the gates of hell. Is that what it feels like?
It's not fun. I can attest to that. But the only place to have any influence on anything is in government. And I think if you're serious about your politics and what you believe in, you have to implement what you know. Don't be surprised if you walk away from a problem if the problem is still there. I think what we have to talk about now, and this is what we talked about with the Troika, was a sustainable economic model. And actually, somebody used the term dull, because what we've had for the last, not just 5 years, but think about the last 20 years, we've had in my lifetime, and I'm only 37, we've had two economic catastrophes. And I don't want us to go back after this whole situation and have learnt nothing, that we think we can now go to the previous model, which was low taxation, high spend. And let's just analyse things for a second, where public spending went from 18 billion to something like 60 billion over the course of 10 years. And we were told all the while that, you know, taxation can go down. Now, I'm a higher tax, higher spend kind of guy. That's my politics. That's what I believe in. I believe in public services. I believe in their provision because I think it's good for society. However, I don't want us to go to a situation where we go back to economic immaturity, where people say, look, we can spend X, Y, Z, but we don't have to raise taxes
isn't the political problem Aon, for the Labour Party, that unless people see an appreciable difference in their standing of living over the next couple of years, it is a real difficulty for Labour?
I think the issue at hand for the Labour Party is that, or for any political party, is that to put the test in government to what you believe in. And, you know, it's easier, much easier to point for, you know, critics of the government to point to things that have been cut than the things that have been salvaged. And if you have 20 things on the table and you make sure that the 19 of them are absolutely protected completely and one of them is cut, then the absolute focus is going to be on that one thing. I'll make the point again. I mean, and it's a
Mary Lou MacDonald, isn't that a fair point, Mary Lou MacDonald, that it's very easy to sit on the opposition benches and pick out some of the difficult decisions and focus on them?
Well, certainly in the Labour Party, and Eamon Gilmore in particular had that down to something of a fine art when he occupied the opposition benches. Part of the job of people in opposition is to critique government policy. That's why we're there, and is to challenge decisions where we see them to be the wrong decision or a bad decision, or more importantly, decisions that damage people, their standard of living, particularly where those people are vulnerable. And I can absolutely say, hand on heart, that it cannot be easy for anybody to be in government at this time, because there aren't any easy options. There is no soft way out of all of this. When I listen to Éireann and his colleagues in the Labour Party talking about thresholds of decency and fairness and so on, I scratch my head in wonderment, because they went along lock, stock and barrel with the Fine Gael view of the world, that you stand off very high earners, that you stand off wealth, and that you levy...
on response very quickly.
You levy the pain on people who have less, and I think that's wrong.
Have no idea as to what wealth is. I mean, Sinn Féin would say that the property tax is wrong. So somebody living in a house worth €1 million shouldn't pay €2,500 a year in a property tax to pay for services. Hold on. You made an accusation.
You have no understanding.
Of the whole basis of the labour movement, which is that, you know, income is one thing, but assets is another. And the real test of somebody's wealth is actually what assets they own. Now, if you don't have, again, the level of economic maturity to have a general discussion on where our economy is going, well, then you're clearly just exploding something unfit for government.
A property tax is actually an aspiration of most left-wing parties across Europe.
Well, concerns of Aon's for my political maturity aside, let me say this. It makes absolutely no sense. It is off the wall to levy a tax, a general tax on the family home, on people who can't make their mortgage, who are lumbered with negative equity, old age pensioners who are no longer in the active economy. And don't try, Aon, to dress that up as some kind of progressive asset tax.
Jack O'Connor, you're a supporter of the Labour Party, but you are at a distance as well, so you have some reflection from the outside. How difficult is it?
I imagine it's extremely difficult, and that's why I used the term I did, that it must be like battling at the very gates of hell. The tragedy in Ireland is that in the last general election, 60% of the people who went out to vote voted for the parties that guaranteed the better off that they'd have to contribute nothing. And since the foundation of the state, more or less 80% of the people have been voting that way. And I do look forward to the day when these two people on my left are in the same government. And I think it's about time that people who think like they do were given a chance to have a say in the way things are done in Ireland, because the people who have been running Ireland on the centre-right, who have dominated our politics since the foundation of the state, have led us to the third major existential crisis in 60 years. So I would imagine that it is very difficult. But what I do say is this, that until such time as we arrive at the level of political maturity whereby we are prepared as a population to afford the people on the centre-left and on the left to govern for a while, I think it's important that the Labour Party, or if for that matter if it's Sinn Féin in another situation, go into a government to moderate the damage that the centre-right can do. And in this particular government, I think it's important to note, and they should be given credit for it, that the Labour Party has been effective in preventing Fine Gael from inflicting somewhere between 1.6
Fine Gael, and 2 billion. People in Fine Gael might not necessarily accept billion, that, Jack. I'm sure they wouldn't.
That doesn't matter, but allow me to make the point, because it's not being made by anybody. They have been successful in ensuring in preventing Fine Gael from inflicting somewhere between 1.6 billion and 2 billion euro of misery on working people and on the people who depend on public services.
Peter
and
Brown,
I think they should be given some credit for that.
Peter Brown, can I just say just quick point, Peter? I think it was yesterday, actually, the Nobel Prize winning economist Joseph Stiglitz was here and he was speaking, and he was saying that Ireland, in his view, might be looking ahead to a lost decade because of what has happened. Mm-hmm. Where do you see this going?
He was being optimistic when he said that.
The issue is, after all that's happened, at the end of the day, we go into 2014 with about 205 billion worth of debt. This country has. The people in this country.
That's our total debt.
205 billion. Interest only is all we can achieve on that. We can't hope to repay it down. It's interest only. And the only way we can get out and service that debt in Ireland is if we punch growth rates way in excess of 3%. 3, 4, 5, 6% growth.
Exactly. At
1-2% growth.
We have unanimity at last.
Now, we're a small exporting economy, so we're very dependent on external situation in Europe. UK is doing very well. Europe's not doing great. But the reality is that there's a lot of good stuff going on in Ireland. I'll certainly agree with that. I'm not a doomsday person. There's a lot of good stuff going on in Ireland. But the focus going into 2014 has got to be get people to work, right? Sure. Because there's a massive double whammy there. They don't, not reliant on the social welfare, and they're contributing
income. But the key question is, how do you do that?
Well, the government have got to focus all their resources in stimulating job creation and growth. That is the only thing that's going to do. Everything else is a red herring and everything else is a myth. And you certainly don't start by going and paying people who are in jobs more at the expense of people who are out of jobs.
Jack O'Connor.
And apart from increasing pay in the private sector, the other thing that we can do...
I'm not accusing
you of saying anything good for workers at all, Peter. But apart from increasing pay in the private sector, the other thing that the government can do, because it's very limited in what it can do, is to deploy the 6.4 billion euro that the Labour Party has finally persuaded Fine Gael to move from the Pension Reserve Fund into the Strategic Investment Fund into the economy. But they can't do that as public spending. And that what
well,
they have
how are you going to get the money to pay your pensions if you rob that money?
Allow me just for a moment. Well, there was no problem with robbing 25 billion of it to prop up the banks, Peter.
That's right. But there's a problem about taking the few pennies
that are remaining to try and generate jobs.
The public sector service pension bill is going to run to 10 billion in the next 4 years.
Allow me to make the point. The point is that for every euro of that, a euro of private money has to be found. And the way to do that is to put in place the Strategic Investment Bank that's in the programme for government.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
And there is an institution about to be wound up at this point in time.
The ACC?
With 470 people's jobs going, all of them expert in the financial services industry, that could be used as the infrastructure for that Strategic Investment Bank. And that's something that could be established by taking 1 billion right. or 2 billion out
very,
of
very
the remaining
quickly to Peter Brown,
pension reserve
fund
money
just
to
say
to do that.
I spent 6 years working in the ACC Bank up to 2001. An excellent, excellent bank. And ACC and ICC were set up to lend into the exactly. agriculture and industrial. Fantastic. They let Muppets take over that bank.
They privatised, hugely talented people in there. An excellent public
and that
institution.
Should be kept. I absolutely agree, Jack. That should be put back in place to stimulate investment in the economy.
Eoin O'Riordan, the point that Jack has made about utilising ACC as a vehicle for investment, is that a runner in your view?
Well, look, it deserves some consideration. But I think what the broad point here is that, you know, employment is everything. I think you can accuse the government of a lot of things, and we have been accused of a lot of things over the last number of years, but nobody could accuse us of not putting employment first and foremost at the front of every single thing we've ever done, from every budget to every announcement all our energies are in that. And even going back to the Troika and the last 3 years and what they wanted to do with state assets, and we made the point that we wanted to, you know, half the money at least to go back into stimulating the economy and job creation. And now it looks like we're going to be even more successful than 50%. But that is everything. That is everything. It's not just in terms of, the, you know, and if you look at what has happened now, we can see that employment not only is unemployment creeping down. Of course, it's not happening fast enough, but it is happening. But employment creation is actually going up, and 3,000 jobs. Just give me 2 seconds just to complete the point. 3,000 jobs a month being created. That is absolutely everything, just for the self-esteem of the country, apart from anything else, and the economic growth. Everything is predicated on growth. We all understand that. We are, you know, having inroads into that, and it is a success. Can we talk about pay rises in the short term? I don't know, but I certainly don't want... what I want, what everybody around this table wants, I believe, is for people to go in, not just to employment, sustainable, long-term careers that pay well.
Mary Lou MacDonald, Michael Noonan made a point the other day when he was describing Thursday as a red letter day in terms of the Troika's last visit. But he made a point that a few years ago, there were a fair few people who he described, I think, as doomsayers, who were predicting we would end up defaulting. We haven't ended up. We haven't defaulted. And we are exiting the bailout. So there is measurable progress there.
Well, according to Michael Noonan, there is. What'll matter in real terms when all of the political rhetoric comes and goes is whether or not people have a chance at decent work, whether or not we stop losing. And Stieglitz was quite right to talk about a lost decade, a lost generation of people. We're hemorrhaging young people in particular to emigration again. And that is the big challenge for us all now. Whether we're in government, whether we're on the opposition benches, we may differ in terms of how you go about it. We'll continue to argue for investment and for jobs. But we will also continue to say this, that you cannot hope through a programme of austerity that hammers people on very small incomes to generate that kind of domestic demand and confidence that the domestic economy requires. That to me is not a statement of any great brilliance. It's a basic matter of common sense. And I think people, having endured all of the pain,
I want to come very quickly
right to look for
to Jack O'Connor and maybe Peter on a final point. Jack, one of the issues facing the government is whether or not they should take some kind of precautionary line of credit or go it alone. very quickly. What would you prefer?
I would prefer if they took the precautionary line of credit, subject to the condition that there would be no additional conditions on it that would have the effect of depressing domestic demand. We're already subject to the strictures of the two-pack and the six-pack and the fiscal treaty and all the rest of it. We don't need any more. And we certainly don't need to be taking on board things that will further depress domestic demand.
Last word to Peter.
We don't need a precautionary line. We've pre-borrowed already. We've pre-borrowed all our requirements for 2014. In moments of good times, the National Treasury Management can nip in and borrow a little bit more. We have pre-borrowed, and it's very expensive, right? But we don't need a precautionary line on top of that.
OK, thanks to Peter Brown, who will be leaving us. After this short break, we'll be back to discuss Ireland and same-sex marriage.